What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Burnout Brighter podcast. My name's Matt, and I'll be your host for this evening's events. This is episode 153. I'm joined, as always, by the stellar, the immaculate Lou. What's going on, dude?
He switches it up every week on us.
He does. It's like unnecessary, but keep going.
The more smoke he blows, it's like, oh, he's going to name me this time for sure.
Good. I'm glad that I keep you guys on your toes that much, because we are also joined by the incredible, the divine Destiny. What's up, girl?
Hey, Matt. What's up? Good to be here. Sorry, guys. I'm not going to be on cam today because I'm in California and my setup is not like all that great, but I will be back Monday so you can see my face.
Fun fact, cameras actually illegal in California, which is why you can't.
Did you guys not know that? Yeah. You can't be on. Yeah. So
this is a lie. This is a.
This week we are joined by developer extraordinaire, making one of honestly the most visually interesting and coolest games I've had the pleasure of witnessing for a last little while. Developer of Protodroid Delta, Adam Kareem. What's going on, Adam?
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for having me. Thanks for having my son on too. You guys might see in the little corner there.
He's so cute. He can come BBC on anytime Earth. He wants.
Ran, they want to look at you. Come say hi to the camera real quick. Look at your little guy. So he's 5. He starts kindergarten on Monday. You got to get in the frame.
Oh my gosh! Good luck, buddy. Have fun.
Oh my god, his smile is it's doing me. Oh my god, it's like sunshine.
He is absolutely adorable.
All right, buddy, you can go back to watching Earth. All right. yeah, I've been working on Protodroid for a little over 2 years now. The Kickstarter was in April of 2020, like right around the pandemic timing. And so it was weird back then. A lot of people were like, oh, definitely don't do a Kickstarter during a pandemic. But I feel like it was like, insert anything, don't do it during a pandemic. I don't think any one thing was like, oh yeah, you know, now's a great time for that particular activity.
It's okay. It's the era of the pandemic was pretty much, let's just throw shit at the wall and see what sticks. And sometimes, sometimes it's fantastic things come out of it. Other times, more fantastic things come out of it, like playing Minecraft with your friends and they never want to play with you again. But on this week's episode, we're going to be talking all about Protodroid Delta and Adam's wonderful career and the incredible game that he's working on. But before we get into all that, let's do a very quick round of what's new to check in with everyone. Adam, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to ask you, what's new? What's been going on? What have you been playing? What have you been watching? Just general life stuff. How are you doing?
Oh, man, general life stuff. Like I said, my son's going to kindergarten. That's kind of cool. Nice. School shopping is a lot of fun when you're doing it for like your kids. It's fun. What's new besides that? Game news. We're trying to push out like a, I would say a beta build, but maybe not that far along, but very close to like a beta where the game is like playable start to finish. And the main thing missing are like some particular art assets.
Incredible.
So I don't know if folks know, like I work a day job. So game dev is like my side thing on the evenings, weekends. I took off this week though, in order to get this beta like stamped and out the door. So it's been, it's a momentous week if we get it done.
Knock on wood. I'm sure you'll get there.
I was going to say, I think it's incredible that like so many developers like yourself, like this is their side kind of hustle. Like they have a day job and they're producing like these amazing games. Like your game looks like it definitely come from a AAA studio. And this is something you do part time. I couldn't even imagine making a game. I'm like, we could play tic-tac-toe. It can't be virtual. I have classic paper game. And pencil, and that's as good as it's gonna get.
That's a classic. I mean, like people, they won't be playing Protodroid in 100 years. You know, they will be playing in 100 years.
They will be playing tic-tac-toe.
Freaking tic-tac-toe. Right? Classic game.
One of the best. Awesome. Well, that's great, dude. I wish you all the best in your continued beta-ness in the rest of the week. Lou, what about you? What's new? What's been going on?
Not a whole lot. Still rewatching Dragon Ball Z, trying to get into it.
Yes.
We're at the Android Saga right now, which is really good. Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's some good stuff. The end of the Frieza Saga is like, it's a little bit drawn out. And I read online that the Frieza Saga and the fight with Frieza was so long because the manga was catching up with the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And in the original Dragon Ball Z, the whole Frieza fight is over 4 hours long.
Yeah,
it's crazy, something like that. Yeah, it's outrageously long.
But like in the manga, it's like a, I think like Frieza mentioned, it's like a 5-minute encounter. Like actually, yeah. Because he's like,
this planet's gonna blow up. Filler in it like that. They always do that. They're like, let's cut. Let's go see what Bulma's doing. No, let's not. Let's finish the fight.
Like, you know what I mean? Is it still that long in Kai then? Because isn't Kai the one that's supposed to like chop out all the filler?
It's still really long in Kai. Wow. Kai has some arcs that are removed that they added as filler, but for the main story arcs, most of it is there, and it's still pretty long. I was talking to my girlfriend and saying Dragon Ball Z is the only show where you'll have like 6 episodes that take place within a 5-minute period in the show. Yep. And then 2 episodes later, they skip 3 years in one episode. Yeah. I was like, oh my goodness, what well, is now that?
That's cool. Done. Yeah.
I went to a bachelor party this weekend and I was introduced to this new drinking game called Danger Can. Has anyone ever heard of Danger Can?
No, that sounds dangerous.
That sounds fun.
You're better off for having heard it. So basically, you stand in a circle, you get a can, open like a full can of beer. You yell "Danger Can" 3 times. Everyone chants with you, and on the 3rd danger can, you hit yourself in the head with the beer can, and you keep going around in a circle until it explodes.
Who? Oh my god! Why?
A point of clarification, these are sober people playing Danger Can, right? Like, I feel as though, how
were
does
you
it
sober at first? Like, were you sober when you started?
You cannot float. You can't float Danger Can unless everyone is a few drinks deep already.
Okay, yeah. Because I'm thinking nobody's like sober and like, yeah, I'm down to get a concussion tonight. Like, no. Like, you have to be. Got it.
Oh my goodness. Our heads were hurting all over. One of the guys was like, I couldn't find any Advil, so I just went to go take a nap. And we were like, oh, that's a great idea. Take a nap after.
Absolutely not. You probably have a concussion. Do not go to sleep. Do not lay down.
Oh my god. Anyway, it was a great time.
Given how we celebrated 150, I think for 200, we need to get some virtual Danger Can going.
I think it's hilarious. I will not be partaking in any Danger Can.
Nicely, that's awesome. Dee, what about you? What's new? What's been going on?
Well, as you guys know, I'm out in California. My friend wanted to get a tattoo from like this artist that she follows. Had no idea that the studio was so famous. Like, I guess the guy who owns it or some of the artists there, like, tattoo LeBron James. They tattoo Post Malone. Her tattoo was a little over 3K.
Wow. Mm.
And listen, I'm not used to this. I get it. I capped an attitude because the artist was 2.5 hours late, right? So I was asking all of my friends, and I was like, hey, is this normal for the artist to be this late? But I guess when you work with somebody who's on that level, that's quite normal. Like, it's like they're doing you a favor by accepting your money.
Oh,
and
my God.
Getting the tattoo looks great, but I absolutely would not. Like, she wouldn't have gotten my $3,000 because that's just how irritated I was sitting there with her. Like, I ended up leaving her. She fell asleep, and I ended up just being like, yo, I'm a bounce. So
you be well, though.
Later. Yeah. Wow. So the place is called Ganga Studio, and they do phenomenal work. I think I'm just like, I didn't grow up broke, but like, I was in college and I was super broke. So I can't justify spending that much money on a tattoo. I just can't do it. I will show you guys it'll be on my Twitter. So if you guys are following my Twitter, I'll post it again on Wednesday so you can see it. It's a Ghibli. I always say it wrong. It's inspired by that. So it's
look at this really studio. Nice. I'm on their website now, and I think I want a tattoo, or at least just the experience of being in this place. Wow, what a nice looking place.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's really nice. So if you guys like, maybe we'll post the link down below. You guys check it out if you want to tap into $3,000. And her tattoo is pretty big. It's like on her shoulder. So this other guy was getting a tattoo, and literally, it was like a box with some words in it, and he put down a down payment. And then like my friend overheard the receptionist being like, yeah, so you owe like $3,500. Like, he had already put down a deposit, and he said, listen, when I tell you this tattoo, to me, it looked like, and this is no hate on them, but it looked like just a box with like some words in it. And I was like, three, like what? Like $4,000. I could have done that with a Sharpie. And like, you could come to me every day and I would make sure that like it looked perfect, you know, like for $3. Like it was just crazy. But big ups to them, because like once you get to that stage and your art's just really well known, like you can charge money like that and it's not a big deal. But I will say, and
rock up 3 hours late.
Yeah, as I was gonna say too, and be late.
Right. I will say this: I think it's absolutely rude to be that late and not communicate that that's what's going on. I don't care how famous you are or what kind of artist you are. Like if somebody flies all the way out to like patron to be a patron of yours. Like, you should definitely communicate that, because we had no idea. I was just like, what is happening? Like, you know, so, but
guys, I'm going to hold you to that, because I think of the four of us, you're the most likely to make it like, I don't know, Rihanna, Beyonce
level. People keep saying that. And I don't know why. It's gonna happen.
So when you come to SNL or whatever, I'm going to find out how late you were, and we're like, see, I knew she's just like the rest of them.
I have anxiety. But wait, Adam, I have anxiety about being late. Listen, I am so like at work, I'm always at my meetings like 10 minutes early. It's unnecessary because I work remote. It's absolutely unnecessary. I could log in right on time and I'm like, man, I better get in there 10 minutes early. You never know what's going to happen. So yeah, but I'll be on time, I promise. Other than that, what did I do? I was introduced to a game by a friend. I'm not going to drop their name, but they know who they are. Introduced to a game called House Party. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of House Party, but it is a, like, when you look it up, it's exactly what it looks like. It's a raunchy comedy adventure.
A lot of voice acting, right?
There's voice acting in it, yes. A lot of voice acting. My favorite character so far is Frank. The only thing that threw me off is like there's a lot of sex in the game, which I did not expect. And like I think it would have been fine if their faces weren't expressionless the entire time that they're doing stuff and they're still the voice acting. Because they're like moaning and stuff, but like there's no like facial expression, right? And like we talk about crazy stuff. I feel like we should have a whole episode about this game at some point. But like there's one part which was like hilarious, and I just have to talk about it. They had a penis size contest where this one guy was like, his name is like Frank. Frank believes that having really big testicles means like you're a real man, right? And that's because he's always heard it growing up. And I was like, oh my God, Frank is so stupid. He thinks that he literally has to have big balls, and he doesn't understand that it's a metaphor for like having big balls means you're a real man. You know what I mean?
He's a literalist.
Like for 5 minutes in this game, maybe 10 minutes, you have to go around getting like people to talk to him. And you're like, okay, what's more important? Having a big, you know, manhood or having big testicles? And he's sitting there arguing his point the whole time. It is the most ridiculous conversation I've ever heard. And I know that it has happened at some point, and that's why they put it in the game. But if you guys can't, definitely check out the game. It's not safe for work. It's not safe for like kids to be around, but I was just like enthralled because I was watching them play it. And he was like, you can make the choices. And I was like, there's too much anxiety here. I can't make choices like this. I'm not a dude. So I don't know what to do, but
yeah, no, that game's gross. I checked it out like a while ago.
It is so gross. It is so gross. But like, listen, it was like watching, oh my God, Revenge of the Nerds, but in a video game. That's what it felt like to me. Like, because Revenge of the Nerds is really gross too. The whole time they're trying to get laid. Yeah. I don't know. This is like dating me. It's a really old 80s movie, so I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. It's like really stupid. But that's what it was like. I think this game would have been amazing without the sex. I'm just going to say that. I think they could have gotten their point across without doing, they could have done a fade to black and it would have been fine. But evidently, Doja Cat is going to be the next DLC, and she's going to be in the game with full voice acting. So I thought I had to put that out there. Yeah. No, it's super popular.
The more you know.
Yeah, it's super popular. Of course it is. Of course it is, right? So that, and just like playing Minecraft and, you know, doing things here in LA, which is really, really cool. Nice. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this game is ridiculously popular. It's got 10,000 reviews on Steam, and it's a paid game. Yeah. I was like, 10K, maybe some free to play thing. It's $25 and it's got 10,000 reviews, which means it's sold like a million copies.
Super popular. I will tell you, probably 99.999% of the people playing this game are dudes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, the more you know, learned about something new today, I guess.
Matt, I definitely think you should play it. There are achievements. I want you to play this game. I will buy it for you because I want to see it. I will buy it for you and Lou because I want to see your reaction. Lou, would you play it if I bought it for you?
Of course.
Oh my God. Okay, Christmas is coming early, baby. Anyways. Matt, what have you been up to? I'm sorry, I took too much time. Matt, go.
No, it's all good. As for me, I'll go quick. I've been playing Cult of the Lamb, loving it. It's a lot of fun. I have like been messaging friends and being like, "Do you want to join my cult?" I've gotten more yeses with zero explanation than I anticipated.
Lou, did he ask you?
No.
Wow, you've been okay, Matt. Okay, keep going. What else did you do
Destiny
today?
You didn't want to know anything about the game.
You want me to explain? Me. You could have asked me. All right,
I'm going to put you in. I'm going to put you in. If you eat shit, not my problem. I'm not being hyperbolic. That is literally a thing that happens. If your character asks me to eat shit, or you know what? No, you were off to the races.
I should have been like one of the first people on the list because you knew how excited I was.
No, it's all good. Because I was like, I don't want to feed Destiny shit. And here we go. You're out here calling me out. Want any shit? That's fine. I'll support you in all your endeavors.
I'll do whatever it takes to get the achievements. Okay.
I've really been enjoying it. The action side of it, like the action roguelike, is a lot of fun. And then you know, building up the cult has been fun. I've only a couple hours in, but I'm really enjoying it so far. I want to shout out PlayStation Canada for sending over a copy of Spider-Man for PC. Been playing it on the Steam Deck. Got it basically to run at a pretty stable 40 to 45 frames per second on medium settings. Again, the fact that this thing runs on a Steam Deck is blowing my mind, let alone that runs decently well. Was never expecting, you know, top of the line graphics and frame rate out of a Steam Deck. So I'm really happy with how well it does run. I'm excited to continue on PC just to really, you know, take it for its journey. So shout out to PlayStation Canada. Thank you very much. And then also want to shout out the team, the PR team behind Shin Chan, me and the professor on summer vacation, the endless 7-day journey. Sent over a couple codes for me and Destiny to check Shin Chan out. So we'll have impressions, videos, and a whole bunch of other stuff going live very, very soon. But I just want to shout them out. Thank you very much. We appreciate the support. And we'll have our thoughts on Shin Chan very, very soon. But without further ado, Adam, let's talk, because you're working on a really cool game, and I myself, as a big fan of Sonic Adventure, as a big fan of Mega Man, I feel like Protodroid is like speaking to my inner soul. So I wanted to ask, you know, can you tell us a little bit about the game and how you got your start on it?
Dude, that's exactly like, oh man, those are the two things that got me going, actually. So like, it's basically an homage to like Mega Man X. So I always loved Mega Man X as a kid. It's like one of my favorite games ever. And I was always just like disappointed that like of all like the iconic like 2D characters like Mario, Metroid, Zelda, all those titles, like Mega Man didn't quite make that leap to 3D in like any meaningful or like good way. There's a couple of titles, like four in total. It's like two Mega Man Legends. There's Mega Man X7, which is not very great, and then there's like Mega Man Command Mission, which is technically an RPG, so that doesn't really count. And but there's like the Mega Man catalog is like 50 some odd games big. It's like, it's huge. If you don't include the Battle Network games, it's like 33 titles of like,
those
like
are my favorite
mainline Mega Man. Right.
And that's like already like 15, but yeah, go on.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was like, man, it'd be cool if there was like a 3D version of it that actually played well and kind of like properly translated the awesome 2D movement and the character design, just a cool world into 3D. But Sonic is important because like I got my start as a game dev, as a hobbyist. I'm still a hobbyist technically. But trying to make like a Sonic game in 3D, I called like Sonic Explorers was the name of it. And I was like, they had this like, he's raising his hand.
I actually checked it out. I played it. When I heard you were coming on the show, I watched you on Black Voices in Gaming a few months ago. And then I heard you talk about it. I was like, let me check it out. And I'm so excited because like, I was blown away. I played a bunch of fan games and you know, you can usually tell Sonic feel like the movement and the physics felt so good that I'm so excited to see why, you know, how much you've grown and how much you've like translated into Protodroid. Because like even playing Sonic Explorers, it already felt great. And like I truly mean that.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, Oh my, yeah, that was the whole point of that game. Because like, if you remember Sonic Adventure, like the original ones, he controls like crap at high speeds. So you basically are ping-ponging between walls and rails. And you're like, if I just hold up, God help me. And that's like, it's just your best strategy. And then like, they try to simplify things in 3D and where it became just like boost to win, where it's like you literally just hold the boost button and you don't have to do anything. He just kind of runs through everything. And I was like, these aren't like really compelling like game designs for someone who could. So that was the challenge of Sonic Explorers. It's like, how do you create a character control or like a design where like they move well in low speed and high speed? Because what happens is at low speeds, like you want to go in the direction you play, you point the joystick at. So like it should be 1-to-1. But then as you pick up speed, if you do that, then the mouse becomes like, or the joystick becomes, has a lot of sensitivity to it, where like the slightest tweak and you're still going at 1-to-1 movement. And so what you gotta end up doing is like kind of like, I want to say like slugging the input, but like forcing it to move more to like a motorcycle or a car, where it's like, if I have a high speed, if I want to change direction, there's going to be like a radius to it. Like I'm forced me to like go outwards a little bit. And then you suddenly become much more controllable at high speeds. But yeah, dude, I was wondering why you mentioned those two tiles. Like, he must either know something.
Oh yeah, no. I told him I told him to be ready. I said, prep yourself. We bringing on Adam.
The thing that's funny is that like Sonic Frontiers, I mean, is very similar to that game I made, the Sonic Explorers game, where it's like you have like an open zone and you kind of go to different places in the map and you do like a set of like challenges or like platforming things, which then unlock more of the level, more of the world. But it's like this open world, semi-open world kind of Sonic game. So I don't know. I find it to be quite a funny little like coincidence, but that's what got my start, was this ambition that like I can create like a really good like Sonic game in 3D. And that I worked for that for like a year or so to get the Sonic Explorers. What you're playing now is like a version 2. The version 1 I submitted for like Sage, the Sonic Amateur Game Expo. And that jump looked, man, we don't talk about that. Game Bruno, dog. We don't talk about that one, man. I'm telling you. But I learned a lot from it. I learned a whole lot. And then more importantly, I learned a lot from watching people play it and like not trash it, but just getting some feedback and just getting a sense of just growing as a developer. But yeah, then it became like one thing after another. It's like, okay, what are other IP that I loved as a kid that I kind of want to see, you know, either revived or like translated? Because my thing is like, I really like modernizing titles. I know a lot of people, when it comes to like retro or like nostalgia gaming, they kind of want to recreate it in the way they remember it. Right. That's cool, but like I personally get a lot of jolly out of like advancing something. It's like, how do I take the essence of what was there, but then make it modern with like a modern like interface and modern game design considerations and modern graphics and stuff to an extent, like something cartoony and stylized. So Sonic Explorers to then this fan game I call Mega Man X and Zero Training Missions, which was like, which eventually became Protodroid Delta. It was just like a 3D Mega Man X. It was like three levels, and that was fun. From there, a Mega Man Legends 1.5. The idea was like, oh, this game takes place between Mega Man Legends 1 and 2, and it's kind of fun. And I learned from that I definitely don't want to make that game. Good lord. That was a good lesson, and nope. Oh, man, that jump. RPG systems suck, man. You got to sit here, you're like designing tables and spreadsheets, and they got to interface, especially particularly with Unreal and their Blueprint system. Like, oh man, dealing with structs. Oh my. Anyways, I'm nerding out a little bit much, but nah. And then the last thing I did was an Ape Escape. Okay, this one is my personal favorite, but this one has no commercial viability. Like, no one. Hear me out. All right, hear me out. It's inspired by Ape Escape, but instead, in this world, Ape Escape's a classic, right? I haven't seen that game in 3 years, right? But instead, it's like you live in like this. The idea was like it's a magical world where people kind of like, as opposed to technology, like was Ape Escape, it's like magic is like the thing. And there's like this angry kind of like witch lady who decides to enchant all the stuffed animals in the world. And now the stuffed animals, she brings them to life and they have become aggressive, right? They're stuffed animals who become very tough stuffed animals, and they've beaten people.
Teddy bears.
And so the game is called Tough Stuff.
Love it.
That's awesome. I love it.
There's a demo for that too. All my stuff was on like Game Jolt and Itch, but like it's a demo for each of these four games. And then so from the four, I was like, well, looking back, which one is a good blend between what I like to make and what I'm good at making? Like I love making Mega Man X and Zero, and happened to be, but that game I knocked out the fastest out of the four. Besides the Ape Escape, besides the Tough Stuff one, the Sonic game, while fun, I could make that one, but it wasn't as much fun, and didn't like the content doesn't really scale as well. And I just wasn't like feeling it as much, particularly because like a lot of it rides on the power of Sonic as an IP. And if you don't have that, it's like, is this really people? It's like in Sonic in this world, it's very compelling. It's like, okay, yeah, I want to do that. But like Red the Panda, which was working title for a for character. Yes, indeed. No one's buying that. Or like no one's like going to get up like, oh yeah, I love Red the Panda. He's clearly original. I know, man. The Mega Man Legends was a hard no, because as much as I love it personally, like the world of that, making that game was miserable. Like I did not enjoy that at all. So yeah, that kind of made it very clear that like Protodroid Delta, like something from Mega Man X and Zero training missions was what I would need to do. And then that's where kind of the nexus of where that's where Protodroid started off. I was like, okay, now let's turn this into something like that's unique and something that doesn't belong to Capcom.
Well, I mean, like Capcom's not doing anything with Mega Man nowadays anyway, so.
I know, it's, yeah, it's a gap. It's like, you know, there's not really anything like this. And so that's what's really cool is that, like, my game is kind of carving out this niche because it's, like, it's similar. The most similar parallel is, like, Ratchet and Clank, but it's much more level-oriented and much more platforming-oriented. Ratchet and Clank feels a lot more like a third-person shooter with, like, cartoony characters.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to distance myself from that and focus more on the core, the superiority of Mega Man, which is, like, you know, what is it, sequelitis? You're just jumping and shooting. You're just jumping and shooting.
Yeah. I love those videos.
And so I had a question. Oh, I'm sorry. What? Somebody was going to say something?
No. The last point was just like, you end up losing that once you have to introduce the second stick. Once you have to ask a player to start manipulating the right stick, it's no longer a pure, like, I'm going to say like a pure, but it's no longer like the simplicity of the game that's that it's inspired by. And so, these are all like, all these things kind of rolled into, Protodroid Delta.
So what I wanted to kind of point out, and I pointed it out on Black Voices in Gaming, because all of your inspirations are like basically the protagonists are male, right? And you decided to go with like a female protagonist, which made me super hyped and super excited, and a person of color, which I love that because I know a lot of like Black developers that I've seen kind of are afraid to put us in the forefront of their games because they feel like they might not sell as well. But I love that you did that. And I love that you picked a female. And could you talk a little bit to our listeners about like what happened for you to make that choice? Why you thought that was the best fit?
It just felt like, okay, for a number of reasons. So like number one, looking at the games that I was inspired by, you look at, I put together like a slide about this because it was like just so telling. It's like in the Mega Man franchise alone, right? You've got like over 30 titles, like literally like over 100 characters. And like every single protagonist across every title is male, except for like the advent, like the later titles towards the end, you might get three or four, but overwhelmingly they're male protagonists. And like there's zero like black or brown, or like Latino or brown characters in like any of that. And it's like, man, that's like a lot of the same, you know? And then certainly if you look at like Super Smash Bros. Melee, like other games like this, or Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, my correction, it's got like 70, like 80 some odd characters, and like less than 25% of them are like female. And then like even fewer of that, like less than seven, are like either black in skin or brown. And if they are, they usually either some like evil person like Ganondorf or like Dark Link or like Dark Pit or like like a dark skin to somebody. So if you look at the title screen, I made a little joke about it. There are more like furries than there are like black people or like even just people of color, like in all the Smash.
Yes.
And the reason why this is important is because like Smash is not an indictment on like Nintendo. It's like a reflection of the gaming history in general. Because it's like these characters represent the pantheon of like some of those iconic characters across franchises, across platforms for 30 some odd years. And in all that time, the most you get that's not that that's either black or Latino or brown or something is like some alt skins, maybe to an Inkling or bad guys. And so it's like, okay, like This doesn't look like people who I knew growing up. You know, it kind of sucks that like we have all this rich history of gaming, but like very, very seldom are people who look like myself or the people I knew growing up are featured as like in the same way that other heroes are featured, you know? So I really wanted to sort of address that. And then like that coupled with the lack of like females like in games, they usually are just like, I'm personally like very passionate about this because I find it really irritating. It's like how oftentimes girls just depicted as like, they're definitely designed with guys in mind, right?
Yes.
They're designed to make it so that more guys buy this thing. And so how do you do that? You make her look sexy or whatever. Or like you got all these guys in armor, like down to their toes. And then she's got like bikini armor because like, God forbid that she doesn't look sexy on the battlefield. Like, you're like, what is this?
Seriously,
It's such a common thing. And I just really wanted to sort of like buck those trends and kind of establish a space to show that like, you don't have to like, characters can just be cool in their own right without having to be like sexualized. They can just be cool because they are. And maybe more opportunities where like females are like at the forefront and like this and like the cast is predominantly female And it isn't surrounding around some sort of love story or some interest about some guy in order to validate or to add like significance to their experience, right? They can just be the same way. You got a bunch of dudes running around as the Avengers and you don't make a hoot about it. You got a bunch of girls running around who are also awesome. And it's just the way it is. So like, I'm trying to, it's funny because like, I'm trying to be deliberate with Protege Delta and not, people ask me about it, I bring it up, but I try not to speak to it unless asked about it because I want to normalize it. Like I want it to be like, oh, cast is all girl. Like, why wouldn't it be? Like, that's just normal. You know, that's just like,
it should be commonplace. Like, we're in 2022. Like, why is it not?
Exactly.
100%.
And so all those things kind of rolled up. And I just felt that, it would make the most sense. And it personally motivated me the most, you know what I'm saying? To sort of like have like a black girl as like the main lead. And like her creator is also a black woman who reminds me of like, she wears a headscarf too, because she's Muslim. Cause it's like, my family, that's how my family, that's what my mom looks like, my aunt, my sisters, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, you know, in the same way that people, this is saying I learned from my game dev journey, that people tend to create things in their own image. They tend to create characters in their own image. And so that's, you know, I don't necessarily think that developers of Euro of up to now have been like deliberately like racist or like, I definitely don't want to do that. But people just tend to make stuff that looks like them and looks like the people that are around them. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess my turn, right? Like,
right.
Oh, yeah.
No, I totally agree with you, except for like Japanese games, because none of them characters look like. I'm sorry. I got to put it out there. They don't. They really don't.
That's the truth. I mean, I hear you. So these are all kind of the motivations that kind of like rolled into it. And just trying to make characters that are cool that making a bunch of characters for folks who don't often see themselves in gaming, who don't often see themselves in these particular roles and slots. Get people to look up to.
That's incredible. And I love that you know, even just like the spotlight that's being shined on it without you actually bringing attention to it, like other people are noticing what you're doing with it, which I think should be celebrated. And like you said, like, I hope we get to a point where something like this isn't like a, you know, a talking point, but I'm glad that we can celebrate it when it is done well and when it is special, because I think it still needs to be, to let other people, because like, even just how many people out there are like, woke game is woke because female protagonists. Shut the fuck up, man. Just like, live outside of your experience for half a second.
It really is that, because to that point, Matt, like when I ran the Kickstarter, like one of the comments I saw, it wasn't a lot, but sometimes I see it, it was like, whoa, is this like woke Mega Man? It was like, what is this like POC or like whatever? And I'm like, and I would just reply like, oh, sorry, like that's, they just look like the people I knew growing up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That's such a good way to reply. I probably would have been petty.
I was fighting to be petty, but like I'm realizing it's like these are like teachable moments or whatever. But I think I found that whenever I did that, it would diffuse the situation like significantly. And people were also like, oh, hey, I understand now. I see there's a lot riding with Protozoid in this sort of like way to sort of like communicate things and teach things. And that's one of them, is that like, you know, like that's the motivation. Is I'm just making stuff that looks like the world that I happen to grow up and be around, you know what I'm saying? And the different types of people, particularly for those who didn't see themselves in the medium they spend a lot of time in. So it's like it's been so it's great when people notice it and I don't have to say it. That means okay.
No, I appreciate you doing it. Yep. I was super excited when you came on and I looked at the game and everything. And I remember you talking about that moment that like your little girl pointed to it. Yeah, I remember, because I was just that's so sweet. But
I don't know if I mentioned to you guys, Matt and Lou, but basically like the moment that kind of like encapsulated all of it for me was like my daughter, we were doing some like, I was working with my comic book artist, and she did some like designs of Delta and like various like hairstyles. Like she had braids and dreads and like straights and like a curly fro. And then my daughter comes up and she looks at Delta and she goes, "Dada, me." And I was like, "That's it. That's it. You know, that's what you do this for." So people, she wouldn't look at Cloud Strife and say me. No, right? You know, and he's iconic. A lot of people looked at him and said, "Yeah, that guy. I see myself in that guy." And so it's nice to create characters and experience people who can look at it and be like, I see myself in that person and that person's cool.
Right. Well, I mean, like, there are so many different types of people out in this world who deserve to see themselves represented in a positive light, not just like the sidekick or the background character or the comedic relief, right?
Or
like
the best friend.
100%, right? Like celebrate. Celebrate your differences. This shouldn't be something that's like, you know, cast away to the side and just kind of forgotten about. Like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So like, kudos to you, dude, because it's amazing.
I wanted to say this really quickly. So like, what they try to do in like media now is, because like they know that's like really shitty to do, to have like a white main character and then give her her best friend is always ethnic. So now when they do it, that's the way it is. Every time they flip it, it's now like the main character is a black person or a person of color and their best friend is always white. I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but it's like, I was like, you don't have to do that. Like, that doesn't need to be a thing. Her best friend could be black. This could just be a black show and this could just be a white show. Like, you don't need like Gregory down the street who just comes across sometimes. You know, I just, I give people random names. I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, you don't need to do that. So I love that in video games. I love seeing so many people of color in game development. And the thing is that, like, you're not waiting to be picked up by AAA. You're not waiting to be a cog in the machine. You're out there creating for yourself and for us. And the thing that you mentioned about your daughter was, it's going to stick with me forever, because when I was growing up, I think I've mentioned this before, but like the closest characters that I related to and I didn't realize at the time why I liked them so much was like Jasmine or like from Aladdin or like Pocahontas, because they looked the closest to my skin color. Right. And you, like, as a child, you don't even think about those things, but it's really important to see yourself represented. So I love that your daughter saw that. And I love that you're creating things not just for men, you know, you think it's important to create things for women. And I want to say that, like, you are an inspiration. And I really love that you're doing that. And I want our listeners to go out there and play the game and realize this is not a game just for black people or just for people of color. Mm-hmm. This is a game for everyone. And that's how it should be seen, commonplace. Yeah. It shouldn't matter. You know, it shouldn't matter if the main character is a girl or if she's black or if she's Asian. Like, just go out there and play the fucking game. Like, enjoy it.
Before, I know we're starting to get closer to the clock here. So before I jump into what will be our final couple questions, I want to throw over to Lou. Lou, I wanted to ask, because you always got the good questions, man. What do you got knocking around up in there?
For sure, yeah. Just to touch quickly on what we were talking about, one of my pet peeves and my girlfriend's pet peeves are characters in shows that are written by men. Yeah. And I think Dragon Ball Z is a great example, just because it's on the board. We're watching and we're like, okay, for much of the show, like, none of the characters are people of color, first of all. Mm. And then
Piccolo, like, Piccolo, he's very green. I want to clarify that.
Enough, yeah. But then it's like, I wonder why Bulma is the only character that they have an extensive bath scene with. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, this is from the 80s and made by men for boys. So
yes,
makes sense. And then also, like, you know, to have that moment of seeing yourself represented in the show, super important. But then at the same time, I also feel like, wouldn't it be great if we all saw ourselves in what we were watching, not by how the person looked, but by their character traits, or you know, their humility or their strength or whatever it happens to be. That's it. I think if we all went down that line, I feel like
it's not like Jasmine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think go ahead, Matt. You go ahead, Matt.
Sorry,
because I got points about that too. It's really
interesting. Yeah, just real quick, because I mean, like, look at Ms. Marvel, right? Like, one of the most, like, highly rated things that Marvel's put out in the last few years, and it has, like, the lowest viewership, and one of the most common complaints is, like, it's not for me. It's like, what do you mean? She's a high school student dealing with responsibility, her family, and powers. It's fucking Peter Parker. It's Spider-Man. But because it's a young brown girl, it's not for you anymore. Like, come on.
No, I hear what you're saying, Luke. I mean, like, and I would say that, like, at least in my experience, and I imagine it's similar to people, it's like, for folks having when you don't look like the person that you're seeing, you have to do that. Like, I look at Tony Stark and I'm like, yeah, he's like my favorite of the Avengers because I just like his character traits. But, like, when it comes down to, there's always, like, a little bit of a barrier, particularly when it comes down to, like, embodying that person. Like, when you want to do cosplay or you want to draw some character, you want to draw yourself kind of in that world. And then those differences become very stark and you realize, okay, as much as I see myself as a Peter Parker, see myself as this, I'm not quite that. You know what I'm saying? Yes. And there's always going to be a bit of a disconnect. And if I were to dress in this way, like, people wouldn't recognize me for Tony Stark. They'd be like, are you like War Machine? Are you something else? It's like, and so that little bit of a barrier is kind of like, you know, it's not like a tragedy. It's not like the greatest crime in the world, but it happens enough. And there's where it starts to build a sort of like subtle sort of message that, like, you know, there's a certain look that you need to be considered a hero. There's a certain way you must appear in order to be more broadly considered to be accepted or like exceptional. You know? And if you don't have that, just inserting yourself into it, it doesn't quite because you see how much of a fit people get in when all of a sudden, you know, they got Riri Williams, or like you just try to swap the character with a different race, like Ariel being the new Little Mermaid. Now that she's like cast as black, and then there's a little bit of backlash about that. And it's like, if she were cast as like, I don't know, like Eastern European or like Arab, if you didn't know she was Arab, people wouldn't say anything because she still looks the part, so to speak. So it's like, totally. And to Matt's point about folks not relating to Ms. Marvel, it's like, the tough part about it is that, like, it's like, hey, welcome to the way the rest of the world has been consuming media. Like, a lot of us, either things we look at, and our stories are very seldomly represented. But this is the media, but we like the action sequences, and we like the personality of the characters, and we have to sort of, like, look past those things that, like, aren't quite culturally in line with what we experience. And we just insert ourselves. And so it's like, you know, it's kind of a nice kind of, like, awakening moment from folks. It's like, hey, yeah, well, we've been doing this for, like, 40 years, baby.
Since media came out. But I wanted to speak on that just a little bit. It's really hard. I think it's hard for someone who's always seen themselves in the media to understand how important it is for people who have seldomly saw themselves in media. And I would say that Black Panther, I'm just going to bring that up as why it was such a phenomenal like movie, why Chadwick's performance was so phenomenal, because you actually had like little white kids and little Asian kids who wanted to be Black Panther. And that was the most amazing thing. That was so amazing. It was incredible. And it showed Black people that we could be heroes too, and that we could be heroes and be successful. And I think it was important for the rest of the world to see that as well. Yeah. So we are making steps towards that. But we still have a really long way to go. Like you said, people are like, I don't want to watch Ms. Marvel because da 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 da. You know, well, I don't want to watch Captain America because, you know, I don't. Right?
I can't relate to a World War II vet. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. I can't relate to sort of World War II vet. I didn't
know what's going on there. Tony Stark, rich white guy. It really is like, but people have a problem with. Personally, when I've said that, so I've said things like, I want to try to watch movies that purposely have more diversity in them. Mm-hmm. And I don't get this from like other Black people or other brown people. They're like, no, I get that. I specifically get it from white males, and they get like really upset. Like, well, like, what does that mean? Like, da 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 da, and like all this woke culture. And it was like, what's wrong with wanting to see myself? Right. And what I'm watching. Like, I don't understand why that's offensive to you. You don't have to watch it if you don't want to. But I love that you're creating this game. I know we're running short on time, but I also wanted to say thank you. I'm going to throw it back to Matt in just a second. But guys, just realize that, like, it should be commonplace. We are working towards that. And there's no reason for you to be angry about it. Like, if you don't want to watch it, just don't watch it. Mm-hmm. You know?
Lou, did you have? I felt like you had another question. You were ruminating, swirling.
Damn, Lou, I'm sorry.
It's all good. It's all good. My question was going to be, what has been the biggest challenge so far with developing Protodroid?
Man, the biggest challenge, honestly, dude, the art, bro. Like, I feel like two things. One, the fact that it's not my full time job. I know for a fact if I was doing this full time, like I'd have been done like a year ago, easy. My lord, I'd be easily. But I've been working on it for about a little over 2 years now, and largely driven by the fact that, like, you know, I'm pretty much moonlighting with this, which has been fun. You know, it's, you know, I got a wife and kids. I've got a pretty solid, stable, like, day job. And so it didn't feel right risking that for what was largely like a passion project at this stage of my life. You know, I felt like other people, you know, if people who make that plunge, you know, more power to them. I just felt for me, it wouldn't be a really good fit. But that's been like the main challenge, like juggling two things. But beyond that, it's definitely been the 3D art. Let me tell you, man, 3D art pipelines. Oh, my God. So hard. So expensive. So time consuming. Because it's like you see like a world, right? Like it's not nicer in 2D because you can just like, you know, slap together. I don't want to say slap together, but like you can get like a parallaxing background and there's your whole world design. Like it's like a couple of sprite sheets and the whole world going to look like that and no one will bat an eye. But in 3D space, it's like because players can rotate freely the camera and go all kinds of places, you have to design assets that look good from like every side. You have to think of the design of that asset from every angle. You have to think about where the player might go. You have to design the space to kind of prevent them from going to certain places. And then just the pipeline from going from like concept art to final 3D asset is like really tough because sure, you have a concept art of like this beautiful panning solar punk looking image or whatever. But then you got to get that over to like some 3D modelers, and they're going to ask, okay, what kind of pieces do you want to make out of this? I could just make that bridge, and I could just make that big like solar panel thingy, but I can't populate 3D space with those two assets. Like I need like building blocks, like bricks, like things like kind of like you think of like Mario levels. I need like, or like Mario Maker. Imagine that, but like in 3D. I need stuff that I can sequence one after another and make walls and then make ramps. And then how do you then translate that singular concept art into each of those individual assets? And then once you finally find a way to do that, then like there's just the pipeline of like, you know, how the person actually authors the asset, like what sort of material definition they're using, what kind of texture maps they're using, are they using the right aspect, the right resolution. Oh my gosh, I easily have spent the most time and money and headache on the art pipeline. The game design part was like by like not even nearly as hard. Not even nearly as hard. So that's been really tough. And I think kind of dovetailing off of that, also finding quality talent. I've been fortunate to work with indies.com to find a bunch of like freelancers and contractors and people who want to jump on the project. A little bit from ArtStation. Some nice finds on Fiverr as well. Like the game's main illustrator, he and I connected on Fiverr originally.
Amazing.
I love Fiverr. You can find some really talented people
on
there.
Fiverr's legit, you know?
Yeah, it is.
You just got to know what you're doing. It takes a little bit of learning curve, like to kind of like get past like the not so greats to find some, but like, yeah, I found some tremendous people over there.
I think I found the person who did our intro and our outro on Fiverr.
There you go.
Look it up. but yeah. And so to your question, Lou, those have been like the toughest things about the development, easily.
All right. Well, I'm going to save my favorite question or classic question for the next time Adam comes on, because I know we're starting to run a little bit long. Because Adam, it has been an absolute incredible pleasure having you. I hope you come back and rock again with us in the future.
I'd love to. I hope I wasn't ranting too long. I feel
no,
like
I'm you a- weren't.
No, not at all.
No.
We're very much a conversational.
Make sure that you get to your appointment, so don't. Yeah, that's right. Why we're cutting it short. Yeah.
Yeah. No, our this show is very much a conversational and free flowing thing. We get sidetracked all the time. Right. But
I talked about Frank's balls, so you know. That's,
I mean, we did talk about that. Adam, if people wanted to learn more about yourself and learn more about ProtoDroid, where could they do so?
Oh, that's a good question. So mostly on Twitter, twitter.com/ProtoDroidDelta. That's usually where I post updates. And there's a link to like the Kickstarter. About once a month, I'll post like a backer update, and anyone can kind of click and see just generally like the progress there. We got a landing page on Humble. I don't know if people noticed, but like a couple months ago, I signed a publishing deal with Humble Games because they've been tremendous support throughout the life of the project. And we kind of like, you know, if you like, they pulled a Beyonce, you know, they liked it.
They know what's up.
So, you know what's up, man. So like on the Humble site as well, there's also, we got a Steam page. So if you just search ProtoDroid Delta on Steam, you can wishlist it today. The target platform has become a lot of platforms, PC, Switch, Xbox, and PlayStation.
Nice.
Yeah, the wish lists are always very helpful. You know, that's kind of, you know, the algorithm overlords, you know, people are kind of beholden to those.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you can learn more. Yeah. And thank you.
Please go check it out. We will have the Steam link right in the description below. So make sure you click on that. Go wishlist it. Throw your support behind Adam and the incredible looking ProtoDroid, because I am excited to play it when the time comes. But again, Adam, thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we get you join us again in the future. Lou, Destiny, as always, it's always been one hell of a ride. And everybody, we will see you on the next episode. Peace.
Bye.